The Last Word with Matt Cooper on Today FM.
We had Paul Howard last week as the first inductee into our Culture Club. Today it's the actress Eileen Walsh. She starred in the original production of Enda Walsh's Disco Pigs, also starring Cillian Murphy. She's currently starring in Enda Walsh's The Same, which is in the Galway International Arts Festival, running from tomorrow, I think, isn't
it?
Yeah. And you believe you have a last dress rehearsal tonight?
Yeah, it's an open dress rehearsal, so we'll have actual human beings there.
Well, thank you very much for coming in when you've got that happening so soon. You've played many people over the last 20 years. You were in The Magdalene Sisters alongside Emma Thompson and Stanley Tucci in The Children Act. But I want to play a little bit. You were a scene stealer in Sharon Horgan's Catastrophe as her friend, the drunken and debauched Kate. So we're going to play a clip from that with Eileen in action as Kate, but we have to give the obligatory language warning case you have young ears in the car or in the kitchen with you.
Are you still in your mum's place?
Yeah. God. Grimsville, Idaho. But still, it's only a dart and two buses to see the girls.
Yeah.
God, the freckle's looking well, isn't it?
I found this, look.
Where's that from?
Oh, Sharon used to be a flight attendant for retarded slot airlines.
St. Mary's Debs Ball.
Look at the stadium.
How are you, Fergal? I haven't seen you since the wedding.
Yeah, all right. You still with Houseboat Harry?
Oh, God, no, no. I left him when he hit me.
What? You never tell me that. He hit you.
Yeah. Well, I mean, he hit me with the thing he threw at me. He threw his iPod Shuffle at me. So I just left. Left all my stuff and I just walked out in the middle of the night.
Well, I mean, that's great.
Well, actually, I mean, I went back the next night to get my purse.
Oh, no, of course. Sure.
And to sink his boat. I sank his boat. You're still married.
I just remembered I left a joint under the floorboard of my bedroom 20 years ago.
Well, what are we doing down here?
Catastrophe was something else. How enjoyable was that to be involved in, Eileen?
Oh, hugely. It worked like a football team. Ben Taylor, who directed it, kept us all very close and would refer to everybody by their surname. So he would just go, Walsh, Walsh, do that thing you do. And you go, oh, yeah, okay. And so there was also a lot of rehearsal beforehand. And Sharon is very watchful of everything. So she'll kind of remind you to do the thing you did that was funny in the first take, but careful with the second take, and like, you know what I mean?
She kind even if she's not directing it.
Yeah, she's because she and Rob wrote
it's their baby, really,
isn't it? It's their baby, yeah. And also, they know comedy inside out. So sometimes actors can be a little bit quick to improvise around stuff. And she's like, no, 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 no. I didn't spend, you know, 3 years writing this to have you come in and think you can work your magic on it. Hang on, you know. And you have to bow to that. She's brilliant.
There are times, though, you nearly go behind the sofa cringing because it is so true to life.
I know.
For relationships and how they develop over the years.
That's what's so brilliant about it, because you want them to succeed because they kind of are you, you know, in bits. I mean, obviously, I drop my kids to school and I get some of the mums going, it's so like you, which is obviously insulting.
What other television do you like? Give us favourite TV shows. What would you like watching at present?
The last play that I did here, I bored the head off poor old Marty Ray talking about Succession because I adored it.
Now, Succession on Sky Atlantic, the first season ran last year. I'm only waiting for the second season to start over here because I think it's on in the States at present.
No, they're only filming it.
Oh, they're still only filming
They're only filming it, yeah.
Just explain, for those who haven't seen Succession, what it's about and why it's so brilliant.
Oh, God. So it's set in an incredibly wealthy family in
it's
New
Rupert
York.
Murdoch's
and
family.
It's, yeah, it's basically Rupert Murdoch's family. Brian Cox plays the head of the family. And the first episode opens with Brian Cox having a heart attack. And the family are all around the bedside. And of course, it becomes so Shakespearean. It's all who's going to take over. And there's, you know, the son with the drug addiction and the daughter who's married the outside of the family kind of thing. And the son who's a total failure. It's just brilliant. It's them clawing their way to the top. And of course, Brian Cox comes back, you know. So it's like the twists and turns are fabulous. And even like the extraordinary amount of money that they have as a family is amazing to watch in that kind of dynasty vibe, you know. But at the same time, it's the hunger and they'd slit each other's throats to become boss. It's
great. It is brilliant. I think it's running again in Sky Atlantic.
Written by a woman. Yeah, Lucy Prebble, yeah, British woman.
Brilliant. You also have two Scandi ones there, Borgen and The Killing. Or is The Killing the Scandi version or the American version?
The Scandi version.
Because I love the American version.
I didn't watch the American version.
Oh, it's brilliantly
done. Oh, sugar. Okay, I'm going to watch that.
Okay, now. But Borgen, for those who haven't seen Borgen.
Borgen is political, about this woman who is running the country, and it's basically a bit like Succession. They're all out together, all the knives are out, and it's how she has to try and keep the government running. And it's just fantastic. The writing is always superb. My husband used to kill me because he's dyslexic, and I'd be like, come on, we'll watch another episode. And he's like, my eyes are killing me from reading all the little subtitles. But yeah, I would kind of do episode after episode after episode.
And you have one other which I'm not familiar with, Years and Years. What's that?
So that's really recent. And that's Rory Kinnear starring in it. And it's about a family. There's a theme here, isn't there?
There is a bit.
It's about a family for me. And it is, again, just superbly written. And it starts with like a Farage type character that Emma Thompson plays. And then it speeds through time and it goes on 10 years again and 10 years. And it just shows you how quickly the far right rises as we kind of celebrate them as some kind of clown figure. And then they become acceptable. And it follows Rory's family, his grandmother and his sisters, and what happens to them during the time. The cast is amazing.
You've sold that one to me,
it's
definitely.
It's really good.
But you love Killing Eve, I believe, as well. So just before you talk to me about that, we're going to play a clip from the first series of Killing Eve, where Jodie Comer's character, Vinanelle, gets a psychiatric evaluation or a psych evaluation.
There are concerns about your state of mind.
Okay.
Have you been feeling any anxieties or stress recently?
I had quite a heavy period last week, but other than that, I think I'm okay.
When was the last time you worked?
Yesterday.
Was it a successful mission?
Yes. I shot him twice in the heart and watched the spark drain from his eyes.
Did you talk to him?
A little. He said he had children and offered me money.
What did you feel when he said those things?
Impatient.
What do you see in this picture?
Good legs. I'm sorry. Your face.
She's fine.
Thank you.
Okay, for those who haven't seen Killing Eve, explain it to us.
So the important thing with Killing Eve is that Jodie Comer, who plays Vinanelle, is amazing. She can do so many accents and takes on so many different characters. She's absolutely stunning. So Vinanelle is an undercover killer for, who knows, some kind of Russian lords or whatever. And she has been sent out to get Eve, because this woman Eve, who works for MI5, who's actually an American but works for MI5, is trying to discover who Eve is, who Vinanelle is. So Vinanelle is out to get her, and then it just with loads of twists and turns. Spoiler.
Don't give away too much, because I actually
haven't
seen this yet.
You haven't seen the first season?
No, I actually keep missing where to find it to actually watch.
Okay, oh well, okay. So it's just brilliant what happens between their relationship, because inevitably they meet, you know. And then the second season has just finished now as well.
Okay, I have a lot to catch up on there. But you also have picked one from your teenage years, which would be one of my favourites from that era as well. Hill Street Blues.
Oh, stop.
Explain Hill Street Blues to a generation who might not be aware of it.
Hill Street Blues is your original, for me anyway, cop show. And it's the Bronx, and it's the kind of the sepia of the cops coming in. And it was so widely cast, wasn't it? It felt like a very racially balanced cop show as well. That, you know, it represented a country that was so different to the Cork, certainly, that I grew up in. And it was terrifying, and it was about prostitutes and drugs. And but then there was women police officers as well, and carrying guns, and it was kind of amazing.
And the DA was a woman as well.
Yeah, that's right. And then the guy, he used to sign off his meetings every day with, remember, be careful out there.
Let's hear a little bit from Hill Street Blues, where this is Detective J.D. LaRue has hit rock bottom, and Captain Frank Farrillo, who's played by Daniel J. Travanti, has had enough of his screw-ups and declares to him, he just can't have drunks working for me.
On the level, Captain, she loaned me the jewelry. No lie. I'll have her in here the first thing tomorrow morning. She'll verify it with receipts, everything.
Sorry, John. Francis, you're running late.
Thanks, Phil.
Maybe you'd like to come with me, J.D. I have to go back downtown and explain to Chief Daniels how we managed to turn a routine stakeout into $30,000 in property damages and a near riot last night.
Hey, you know, I'm really sorry about the car, Captain, but it's not my fault that those brakes failed.
I'm sorry, and it's not my fault. Just one thing after another, LaRue, and somehow it's never your fault, is it? Did you make that phone call I suggested last night? You need help, J.D. You should have made that call.
It's funny, I meant to, you know, but with one thing and another,
don't bother,
I got...
LaRue. I just can't have drunks working for me.
Come on, Captain.
I suggest you put through a transfer, J.D. I don't want you around here anymore.
You think I need this crap, Farrillo? $490 a week to cozy up to the slime of this city for 10 hours a day? You think I need that? Let me tell you something, man. I put my butt on the line for 12 years for this department. I got 3 citations. I got a higher arrest tally than any clown in this room. And if I got a few personal problems, it's this lousy, stinking, rotten job that gave him to me.
I think actually Hill Street Blues, fantastic drama. There was an element almost of a sort of a cop soap opera about it.
That's what I was going to say. What a great clip. What a great clip, because there's so much about character in that. You know, a man giving all his life for such little money, such long hours. And yeah, he's got some personal problems. Who wouldn't with all that going? It's beautiful.
Let's move to movies. And you have picked Heartburn as your favourite movie. No, tell us about this. Who's in this? From what era is this?
So this is Nora Ephron, who wrote Sleepless in Seattle and You've Got Mail and lots of things. But this is not one. It was her book to begin with. And then Nora...
It was a novel, but it's her real life story.
Yeah. So anyway, it's Meryl Streep and it's Jack Nicholson. Oh my God. You can't get better than that. There we go. That's it sold already. And then I said this in the car yesterday to Catherine, my sister, as we were going out with our other sister, Mary, to the airport. And I was saying, what's the song in it? And I'm not kidding. Catherine, word for word, did the whole song.
What song was that?
Mommy Breeze is in. I know nothing stays the same. Do you know it? Join in.
I think, is that Dolly Parton singing it? No, but I know the song you mean.
Yeah. Anyway, so there's that. She and Jack are married. She is pregnant. They have a few kids. Meryl uses her own children in the film. And the acting between them is so obviously natural. There's a scene where she's feeding and she's just shoving the food into the child's mouth, which you would never do if the kid wasn't yours, you know. It's that bad treatment that only you as a mother can do. Anyway, Jack has an affair.
Okay, actually, I think Meryl Streep's daughter became an actress herself, didn't she? And she was in The Newsroom and various other things like that.
Yes, that's right, yeah.
Okay, we have a clip, and this is the scene in which Rachel, played by Streep, feeds her daughter in the kitchen while talking to her cleaner, Della, about her marriage breakdown.
Where's my father, do you know?
I just clean, honey.
Della, do you ever, would you... I have a lot of errands to do in the next couple of days, and I was just wondering if you would. I have to. My husband, you know, the one I married at the wedding, I left him. Here. He's been seeing someone very tall. Someone that I know. Not very well. I mean, I've never had lunch with her or anything, but when I asked him about it, he said yes. And he didn't exactly say yes, but that was the idea.
I'll stay with the baby.
Thank you.
You also had in your list of favourites other Meryl Streep movies. You clearly have a thing for Meryl Streep.
I do, but you know, what actress doesn't? But I actually only suddenly realised that after I wrote my top three down, I was like, yeah, they are the movies that I return to.
Because the others are Silkwood and Kramer versus Kramer. Kramer versus Kramer was with Dustin Hoffman,
yeah,
wasn't it?
Yeah.
And that's another relationship breakdown movie.
Oh, God, yeah. She needs to get away, but it's not because of anybody else. She can't be a mum. She can't stay at home. And it's kind of like the beginning of a female independence thing, and just the unhappiness in her is amazing. Obviously, stellar performances. Again, even the little kid is heartbreaking.
And Silkwood, what type of movie was that?
Silkwood is all about this small American town, and both her and Cher work in a chemical reactor, and there's a leak. And it's what happens to this small town. It's stunning.
Which I imagine for all those people who've seen Chernobyl recently, that's the type of
Did
thing.
Did you watch it?
Chernobyl's magnificent.
Isn't it amazing?
Listener says, Carly Simon, who sang that song, Coming Around Again.
Very good, listener. Okay.
And another one comes on and says, I finally saw an episode of Years and Years, or only saw a bit of the episode, but the speech from the grandmother about capitalism and consumerism greed was so powerful and really stuck with me.
Okay. Yes.
Years and Years, I have to say. Podcasts, you've gotten into podcasts. So give us an example of a podcast that you've fallen in love with.
I love This American Life. Right. And I was very lucky, did Theatre for One with Landmark recently. Christine Jones, who's the main head behind Theatre for One, started to talk about how she knew your man who does This American Life. And I was like, oh, God, I love him. I love that podcast. And it's just a collection of stories that are brought together from lots of different American independent radio. And they look into them further and they become little documentaries, about an hour long each, and there's so many to choose from. It is fantastic.
You've also picked Dear Joan and Jerrica. What's that?
Yes, so Dear Joan and Jerrica is one of the funniest, filthiest, so I apologise, people, but if you've got a filthy mind and a bit of free time, sit down and listen to it, because it will make you fall off your seat laughing.
Why, what is it?
It made me snort with laughter. No, that's saying something. It is Julia Davis and Vicky Pepperdine. Guys, I'm doing very well with names because normally I'm really rubbish on names. I am so proud of myself. And they are two women who sit down and have this radio problem page kind of thing. So people write in with their problems. However, both Julia and Vicky constantly blame the woman for the problems. So no matter what comes in, it's always, well, I mean, judging from your photograph, you are a little bit overweight. Husbands deserve, you know, beautiful wives, and so what? You know, you don't feel like having sex. Your husband needs it. So they are the anti-feminist, and it is beyond funny.
I believe it's knocked Love Island off the top of the podcast charts.
Stop.
Let's hear a clip from Joan and Jerrica.
Dear Joan and Jerrica, my husband shocked me in a good way recently by handing me a golden envelope on my birthday. I was so touched until I opened it. It was a voucher for a facelift. He says unless I do it, he's going to leave me for the woman he used to sleep with when I was going through chemo. What should I do? Sheila Cross from Coventry.
Oh, yes.
That's very tricky, isn't it? Because, oh, I feel for John.
Yes, what a poor man. What a terrible...
So he's gone through his wife having cancer.
Mm.
He's sought solace in another woman because he's a man and he needs some physical demonstration of affection and support,
yes,
which
absolutely.
Clearly Sheila didn't feel she could give.
Because, of course, there's no reason why you can't continue a very active and very enjoyable sex life whilst undergoing chemo with the right wigs and whatnot. And there's no reason why you can't. She doesn't say why she's withdrawn her.
No, it sounds like a bit of a power trip, really, from Sheila. Mm. So I think in many ways him offering you, giving you a voucher for a facelift.
That's very kind.
It's very, very nice.
Yes.
And he's saying to you, look, you get this done, chum, and I will be there. It's a no-brainer.
It is a no-brainer.
Really?
I don't understand, Sheila, what your problem is.
That's excellent. And it's all in that vein, is it?
Oh, yeah. And worse.
Excellent. I look forward to downloading that one as well. Okay, I want to go to books now because you have picked out as your favourite novel another one that I absolutely love, The Goldfinch by Donna Tartt. Why this?
Well, I had read Secret History, Donna Tartt's previous book.
Which is also great.
Which is also great. And then The Good Friend was, or The Little Friend, it was called, The Little Friend, The Good Friend. Anyway, I can't remember. I lost interest in that and I thought, oh. And then The Goldfinch came out and like she writes one book every 10 years or something. And they are...
They're enormous.
Enormous. So I was kind of with a little bit of trepidation, but I knew, you know, I just needed to get into it. I found myself going to bed early to just get an hour to myself. To kind of, I was eating the book. I loved it.
Describe it. Now, that's quite hard.
Yeah. So the book opens with a young boy in an art gallery with his mum and an explosion happens. And then he ends up losing his mum. That's no great. Like you know that. And he has this friendship with a very old man who he meets and who pulls him from the wreckage. And also...
He takes something from the museum.
Steals something from the museum. And that remains with him his entire life, this relationship between the old man and the thing that was...
Let's hear an extract from the audiobook for The Goldfinch. This is read by David Pitou.
During those restless, shut-up days, I got to know every inch of the room as a prisoner comes to know his cell. It was my first time in Amsterdam. I'd seen almost nothing of the city, and yet the room itself, in its bleak, drafty, sun-scrubbed beauty, gave a keen sense of Northern Europe, a model of the Netherlands in miniature. Whitewash and Protestant probity, commingled with deep-dyed luxury, brought in merchant ships from the East. I spent an unreasonable amount of time scrutinizing a tiny pair of gilt-framed oils hanging over the bureau, one of peasants skating on an ice pond by a church, the other a sailboat flouncing on a choppy winter sea. Decorative copies, nothing special, though I studied them as if they held, encrypted, some key to the secret heart of the old Flemish masters. Outside, sleet tapped at the window panes and drizzled over the canal. And though the brocades were rich and the carpet was soft, still the winter light carried a chilly tone of 1943, privation and austerities, weak tea without sugar, and hungry to bed.
This story goes across the Atlantic, across the United States. It goes in around the United States, New York, Nevada. Yeah. It's also a thriller in parts. It has everything. It's turning into a movie, apparently. And I can't for the life of me see why it's a movie when it could be a 10-part series.
Particularly because it takes the little boy from then to being a grown-up. You're kind of going, you could follow this for years. Also, that audio clip, I mean, I didn't follow what that man was saying, but he had a very sexy voice, didn't he? Now, so if, like, the book is much better than how that...
Clip sound.
Yeah, that clip sound. But, you know, you can read it in your own sexy voice.
Okay, let's go for your favourite band.
Oh, yeah. So, R.E.M. is the only answer to that, because that was the only band that I bought all the albums for when I was a kid and a teenager, and would panic if their new video came on MTV and I hadn't pressed play and record at the same time. And I used to act out the videos with my friend, Begley. That was the one that I was a total loser for.
Last night we did play a bit of Man on the Moon because we were doing all moon music, but you've gone back to the 1991 album Out of Time for this track, Losing My Religion.
Set it up.
I actually remember seeing Michael Stipe and REM in the RDS Simmons Court, I think it was either 88 or 89, which would have been even before that. And it was a fantastic show. But your best gig, what are you going for?
Oh, my best gig. Who did I go for? Oh, yes. Gosh. David Gray in Nancy Spain's in Cork. So just before David Gray hit it huge, he played in this really tiny back bar venue in Cork, just off Barrack Street. And it was amazing because there must have been maybe like, probably for fire risks, there should have been 120 and there was about 200 people all squished in there. And it was amazing to hear him live. It was so beautiful, incredible. Really lucky because just after that, it kind of sparked and went. He was playing a lot bigger.
Well, we don't have him from Nancy Spain's, but we do have him playing live from Vicar Street in 2000. Please forgive me.
Please forgive me if I act a little strange. For I know not what I do. Feels like lightning running through my veins. Every time I lose you, every time I lose you, every time I lose you, every time I lose you.
We had David Gray at the Live for Music Today FM event last year. He remains so incredibly popular in Ireland, Eileen.
Yeah,
he's even more popular in Ireland than anywhere
else. Yeah, yeah. And actually, Kathy Burke, the very wonderful national treasure that Kathy Burke is, really adored him. And she put him in. She was one of the reasons why he actually broke into the UK. I can't remember the name of the film now, but she insisted on his music being used as a soundtrack to this particular film that then kind of launched him or made him a bit bigger, more known in the UK.
Of course, we were earlier talking about television from your roles in the likes of Catastrophe, but stage is what you love, and as we said, you're appearing in Enda Walsh's The Same from tomorrow evening in the Galway International Arts Festival. But your own favourite play or theatre or musical, what would you pick?
Recently, this is a couple of years ago actually, it was a friend who's an actor, it was his birthday, and as a treat I bought us tickets to see this play on at the National called The Flick by Annie Baker, American play, and it's at like 3 hours long, and I thought, oh, okay, come on, it's supposed to be great, we'll just go and see it. Cost me £60 a ticket. So, like, the pressure was on, it better be good, right? Because no theatre can be that good, really, for £120. Anyway, but we sat there. It was amazing. We could have stayed there the whole weekend. It was only three actors, two guys who are, one's in the job for ages, cleaning the cinema in between screenings, and one is the rookie guy being taught how to do it. Like, it's just cleaning the cinema. And so they come in, they're talking, it's all monologues, they're chatting to each other about how to do this, and they're both secretly in love with the projectionist. And so she pops her head down through the projection hole, and she has little monologues down to them, chatting away. And it's just the moments grabbed in between. And then often they'll face out towards the audience, and you see the credits roll over their face, you know, this kind of thing. It's beautifully directed, beautifully acted. Genuinely, we could have stayed there all weekend.
Unfortunately, Eileen, I have run out of time. Eileen Walsh has been our guest on the Culture Club. We didn't get a chance to get to Dear Evan Hansen as your favourite musical.
I just remembered loads of names. I think I'm great.
So thank you very much. Best of luck with your new play in the Galway International Arts Festival.
The Last Word with Matt Cooper on Today FM.